Topic for this morning, Parshas Shmos, is a troubling medrash. Take a look at the first source on the sheet, please. This is when Moshe comes out of the palace. Vayetze bayom hasheni. He goes out on day two. Remember that Moshe left the palace on day one, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Jew, and he killed the Egyptian. Well, now he comes out on the second day, and he sees two Hebrews fighting. And he says to the wicked one, why will you hit, or why are you hitting the other fellow? Right? There's a discussion in the Medrash, had he hit him yet, or not, but not the point right now. The fellow turns around and says to him, Vayomer, Misamcha le'ish sar v'shofet aleinu. Who made you an officer over us? Who made you in charge of us? Hala hargeni ata omer kasher haragto es hamitzri. You're going to kill me the way you killed the Egyptian. Vayira Moshe vayomar achein noda hadavar. And Moshe is afraid and he says, now, literally, the matter is known. The word is out. And on a very simple and straightforward level, what is it that Moshe is saying? What's Moshe's reaction here?
They know that I killed someone.
Yeah, they know I killed someone, I'm in trouble, and therefore he flees, right? He runs away. That's a straightforward read of this, of the story. But the Medrash says that's not what Moshe is saying is known. It's not his guilt that is known. Rather, now I understand something, he says. And that's what we see in source number two. Medrash says, Haya Moshe maharher belibo. Moshe thought in his heart, Va'omer, machatu Yisrael shnishtabnu mikol ha'umos. Why is it that we are the ones who end up enslaved? Why do they hate us so much? Why is it that that we should be enslaved? Kevin Shashama Devarov, when he hears what the man says, Amar Lashon Hara Yesh Beinayim. He says, they have harmful speech among them. Heyach Yiyu Re'uyin LeGeula. How can they ever deserve redemption? And therefore he says, Nodah Davar, it's known. Atayadati Be'eza Davar He Mishtabdim. Now I know why they're slaves. The Jews are slaves because they speak Lashon Hara. They speak harmfully about others. What is the Lashon Hara that Moshe is referring to here? What does that mean? Where's the Lashon Hara here?
That he, I mean, I guess killing the Egyptian, is that not Lashon Hara? Or, yeah, I mean, they're talking amongst themselves how Moshe's killing someone.
So, one possibility is that, and I don't know if this is what you're saying, is that people found out somebody must have talked. Just the fact that there's an awareness that Moshe killed the Egyptian is a statement of, uh-oh, people are talking. And of course, there are other midrashim that say, well, actually the one who says this is the one Moshe saved yesterday. Right? The whole association with Dathan and Aviram. But the first and simplest to read is simply to say, awareness of what Moshe did indicates that people are talking. The second way that I would look at this is that it's that they're judging Moshe negatively. In other words, you're going to kill me the way you killed the Egyptian. Are you a murderer? You follow? It's the branding of Moshe as a murderer. They know that I killed the Egyptian in order to defend the Jew, but that's not the way they're looking at it. They're looking at it as, this is a bloodthirsty person, he killed the Egyptian yesterday, and now he's going to kill me because he doesn't like what I'm doing. You follow? That, I think, is a stronger approach to it. But here's my question, which I'd like us to answer. Why does Moshe blame the Jews being in exile on Lashon Hara? What's the connection here? Why does Moshe say, oh, now I understand. I was really bothered. The Jews have been slaves in Egypt for a very long time by this, you know, by the time Moshe gets around to this. The standard count of 210 years includes some period when they're not enslaved. But nonetheless, it's 130 years now since the Jews came down to Egypt. Moshe says, why is it that these people are being enslaved? And the answer is, God is angry at them because they speak Lashon Hara. I don't understand what this really means. What is it? Can you help me out here? Yes, Leah.
I don't understand it either.
Okay, so we're in the same boat.
Could it be that he's maybe referring back to Yosef and the Mechira with the brothers, and there was just so much like slandering, changing of flight of words, and just not being straight and honest with Yaakov and the brothers and the selling? Going back to that and how it's kind of come full circle until now, or it's just been continuing?
Good. So I thought what Nechama said originally when I approached this topic, which was a while back, I thought, look historically at what brought us into Mitzrayim in the first place, right? We had a shiur a couple of years ago about Lavan, and the impact of Lavan on the Jewish people, and how Lavan, how Lavan switching Leah and Rachel ultimately shapes the future of the Jews, right? I'm not going to ask you if you remember all of it. That's not fair. But this one I remember. And Hadassah, you really liked this one. The switching of Rachel and Leah leads to the creation of different clans among Yaakov's children. You have the sons of Rachel, you have the sons of Leah, and you have the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah as a result of this. There's animosity between them. We're told in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev that Yosef is hanging out with one group. He's hanging out with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. We know, of course, that Yosef brings Lashon Hara to his father, Dibasam Ra'ah, right, about his brothers. The brothers, in turn, speak Lashon Hara to each other about Yosef, this dreamer and all of that, and they end up selling him. So we end up down in Egypt with great hatred among ourselves, with splits among ourselves, which operate with Lashon Hara along the way. Yosef's about his brothers, and his brothers about him. And in the end, we get punished for it, if you want to say that this is a punishment for that, via Paro's Lashon Hara to the Egyptians, right? Paro says to the Egyptians, Hava nischak malo, let's be smart, pen yirbeh, lest they become many, Vayaki sikrena milchama, and then there's going to be a war. V'nosaf gam hu alsona enu. These Jews are a threat. They're going to join our enemies. Because the Jews are going to join our enemies, therefore we better act preemptively. So Paro employs Lashon Hara against the Jews in order to enslave the Jews. At each step of the way, there is that harmful speech involved. You follow? Not only that, but Moshe is guilty of it. I brought you in source number 3, where Moshe says to Hashem, "V'hein lo ya'aminu li." The Jews are not going to believe me. They're not going to listen to my voice. They're going to say, God did not appear to you. And Hashem turns Moshe's staff into a snake, which we understand as a demonstration of a criticism of Moshe for Lashon Hara. So the core idea could be, what the Medrash could be saying, is that Moshe recognizes Lashon Hara is what did this to us. This is why we are, this is why we're in Egypt, and we have to go through the experience in Egypt to essentially learn to bond with each other. And I had an idea that I expressed from Zalman Sarotskin about the Jews becoming like matzah, where the water and the flour spread, I'm sorry, not spread, bond with each other instead of spreading out like with chametz. That's all one idea that you could give in order to explain this. The Medrash is saying, Moshe is saying, we are in Egypt because of Lashon Hara, because of historical events that involve Lashon Hara and an element of division among us. But I'd like to present a different perspective. it's not necessarily about the historical events as much as an insight into Lashon Hara that we can see in the way that Moshe suffers from people's Lashon Hara about him. In other words, there's something about Moshe's experience with Lashon Hara, because Moshe is a victim of Lashon Hara repeatedly in his career. If you looked already at the sheet, then you're disqualified to answer this question. But where does Moshe face harmful speech, slander, negative remarks about his conduct from others? Right. So that's one example. Miriam and Aharon both talk about Moshe in source number 6. But the Ber Miriam Aharon be Moshe, right? The whole discussion of the woman he married and so on. That's one example. What else? Where else is Moshe a victim of Lashon
Hara?
So in source number 7, good, Alina points out that Korach says Moshe is arrogating all of the power for himself, right? That's an example of Lashon Hara. Where else? Actually, sorry, that's not number 7, that's number 8. But we'll do number 7 as well. Number 7 is with the Meraglim, right, the spies. We would have been better off had we died in Egypt. You brought us out here in order for us to die. Or look at the earlier examples that I brought you in sources 4 and 5. You can really start, of course, with our story about Moshe killing the Egyptian. But if you look at source number 4, when Moshe comes back to Egypt and he tells tells Paro, you have to let the Jews go and all of this, the Paro makes things worse. And the Jews say to Moshe, you've made things bad for us. You have given us a foul scent. Hivashtem es recheinu, right? In the eyes of Paro and in the eyes of his servants, you've actually made things bad for us by coming here and acting. And then in source number 5, the Jews come out of Mitzrayim. They're now at Yamsuf. They're at the sea. The Egyptians are coming after them. And the Jews say, why'd you take us out of Egypt so we could die here? There weren't enough graves in Mitzrayim. Each time Moshe is facing people saying he's done something terrible. Right? In each case, they're saying, Moshe, you've done something wrong. Moshe, you had bad motivation in some cases. In some cases, it's just, Moshe, how could you have done this to us? But there's a common denominator in all of these cases. We now have 6 cases. The statement about Moshe killing the Egyptian, the statement about going to Paro, the statement about taking us out of Egypt to die in the wilderness, the Lashon Hara about Moshe separating from Tzipora, or whatever it is that happened there in Parashas Baaloscha, the spy saying we would have been better off dying in Egypt, this land, we can't conquer Israel, and so on, Korach saying Moshe took all the power for himself. What's the common denominator besides the fact that people are saying something bad about Moshe? Seriously, when you think about this, you wonder, like, what a terrible career this guy had.
Yeah. They were all from Hashem, like the commandments that Hashem made him do? Like he was just the servant?
Not all of them. Moshe decides on his own to separate from Tzipora. Granted, Hashem approves it. Moshe kills the Egyptian without direct message from Hashem for him to do so. We've said there's Ruach HaKodesh, potentially. Naomi?
Is it maybe that he's trying to help in all of these situations? Like, be a better...
Mm-hmm.
Like, he tried to separate from Zippor to kind of be closer to God. He tried to help in Israel by, you know, speaking to Paro. He tried to get them to Yamsuf to get them out of Egypt. Like, all these, he was trying to do something good, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone spoke back
right
about him.
In all of these cases, they're talking about something true. In other words, no one is making up anything that Moshe did here. They're reporting the facts. But Moshe did something positive, and the people interpreted it in a negative way. You follow? It's very interesting because compare that with the two times that Moshe is criticized for Lashon Hara. One, the example we gave in source number 3 when he said the Jews aren't going to believe me. And then the other is where the, sorry, I have to make a note for myself here. The other is when the people want water and Moshe turns to God and he says, Od ma'at uskaluni, just a little more and they're going to stone me. And Hashem says to Moshe, go out in front of the people. You see if they stone you or not. In those cases, Moshe says something negative that's actually not true. Right? It's about something that they didn't do and would not have done. Whereas in the Lashon Hara about Moshe, it's Moshe did something that he wanted to be positive, something that in many of the cases, as Nechama said, Hashem told him to do, and the people interpret it as a negative. And I think there's something, yeah, Hadassah. So, Hadassah, what you're saying is something I actually want to go close to, but I don't see it in with the same level of intent. I think there's an accidental, unintentional element to it.
Can I just add to that?
Sure, Goldie.
I actually also don't think it's surprising just because of Moshe's personality. Like, I feel like throughout Sefer Shmot, like, the beginning especially, you realize that socially he has sort of some issues, not issues, but just he grows up in a way that sets him up for problems with interhuman relations.
What do you mean?
So it's
by the fact that he's away from everybody else?
He's away from everybody. The fear that he has about his speech. I feel like he's totally set up. Like I can see how it makes sense. Yeah. When he tries to say something, somebody else, there's a good chance they'll interpret it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily their fault.
Got it. So I'm going to go also a little bit towards that, although I have a little bit of a different, you know, piece of it. I definitely hear both ideas, both what Hadassah is saying and what you're saying, Goldie, in terms of what it is about Moshe that might actually contribute to the misunderstanding. Sometimes people speak Lashon Hara, for their own gain, right? Just sometimes people are actively, you know, just malicious because they want to get something out of it. And sometimes that getting something out of it is actually destruction, tearing down the other, right? I brought you the Gemara in Erechid in source number 9. We're not going to go through it right now, I think, because it'll just take us further afield. But the Gemara talks about the comparison of a speaker of Lashon Hara with a snake, because a snake, when it attacks, just destroys, but it doesn't eat. It doesn't eat its prey. The snake is just there as a destructive, harmful force. And that's the way the Gemara looks at Lashon Hara. It's just about tearing down. Sometimes people do it out of sheer boredom, just because, you know, nothing else to do, so I'm going to talk about and, you know, it'll be entertaining. But I think, and this takes me closer to where Goldie was going with it, a little bit different, but, you know, similar, is that people often perceive the actions of others in light of themselves. in light of their experiences, in light of their own motivations. We see ourselves in others. And often that can mean that, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be this way, but it can mean that we see the darkest parts of ourselves in the actions of others. Instead of saying, I'm going to think that that other person is like me at my best, it's, I'm going to see that other person as being like me at my worst. The Gemara in Kiddushin has a line at the end of the Masechta, Kol ha-posel bimumo posel. All those who disqualify others, who identify blemishes in others, identify their own blemishes. If you see someone call someone else X, if you see somebody label somebody else, you know, with some negative label, often it's because they're looking in the mirror. They're seeing their own flaw that they know on some level is in themselves. That's what they're identifying in others. So if they are people of greed, they're going to interpret others' actions as being greedy. That kind of flaw. And Moshe is misinterpreted often because he is so different from everybody else, and specifically in terms of his purity, he's different from everybody else. As as Nechama had pointed out, many of these actions were at God's command. But the people see the actions as something that Moshe does on his own, and perhaps even for selfish reasons. He is the one who is so dedicated to God. He's not doing things for himself. He's the one who speaks to God face to face. He's the one, I brought you the Meshech Chachma in source number 10, who says Moshe actually loses his free will. The Meshech Chachma of Meir Simcha Cohen was bothered. He says, how is it that Hashem says that the Jews will always believe in Moshe? V'gam v'chaya aminu le'olam, the Jews will always trust you. He takes that as an imperative. The Jews must always trust Moshe. And he says, but Moshe could end up straying. Moshe could end up doing something inappropriate. Moshe could end up making a mistake. And his answer is that Hashem takes away Moshe's free will, so that Moshe actually is only a servant of God. Whatever Moshe does is going to be what God tells him to do. How do you reconcile that with the mistakes that Moshe does make? Look in the Meshech Chachma. But the point is that Moshe is, at this stage in his life, only operating as an agent of God. But the people are normal, flawed human beings. And when they see Moshe's actions, they assume flawed motivations. And not only at that stage where Moshe is now the leader taking them out of Egypt, but apparently even in this stage at the beginning of his life. He kills the Egyptian. He killed the Egyptian to save the Jew, who he thought was being attacked, beaten, possibly killed. However, if you go back to the pasuk in source number 1, the fellow says to him, first, before he says, are you going to kill me? He says, who put you in charge? The fellow thinks that Moshe killed the Egyptian because he sees himself as a judge. They think that Moshe took them out into the wilderness because of his delusions of grandeur. They think that he went to Paro because he is a zealot. They think that he separated from Tzipora because he is cruel and self-aggrandizing. They think that he gave the jobs to Aharon and to Aharon's son Elazar and all that because he is self-serving. They took what Moshe did and assigned for it the worst possible motivations that they found within themselves. And I think that might be why Moshe never explains. Right? We've identified 6 times when people interpret Moshe's actions in a negative way. Each time, Moshe had a reason for what he did. But what's Moshe's response? How does Moshe answer each time? He turns away. He falls on his face. He prays to God. Moshe never attempts to explain, because the facts aren't in dispute. It's only the motivation, and he can't prove that. Only God can prove that by confirming Moshe's motivation. And that's what God does for him at some of the occasions. Yeah,
it's interesting to see Moshe's reaction, I think, before he became a leader. So when he struck the Egyptian, he ran away. But right. All the other times, as Rabbi Tershita just pointed out, he just remained quiet or...
Yeah. I mean, he ran away also because he was vulnerable, right? If people find out, they're going to want to kill him. Right, like when Hashem says to him, "It's time to go back to Egypt. Those who wanted to kill you are now gone." So, ostensibly, it's that he fled because he feared. But the silence is really remarkable. I mean, wouldn't you want to respond? You know, Moshe is not the only one who's like this. He's not the only one to face this. There are others in the Torah, and specifically Nevi'im, in Tanakh, who have this same situation, where they follow Moshe's model of being devoted to Hashem, and they get hit for it. If you take a look at source number 11, I brought you the example of Pinchas. When Pinchas attacks Zimri, right? Zimri and the story of Zimri and Cozbi, where Zimri, the leader of the tribe of Shimon, takes up publicly with Cozbi, a Midianite woman. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin describes how Pinchas is described as being, descended from Putiel, which is another name for Yisro. And they say, you know, look at his heritage, Putiel, Pite Magalos Lavodazara. His ancestor, not Agalos, Agalim, his ancestor fattened calves for idolatry. Who is this guy? Now he gets to come here and attack Zimri? Pinchas did something for God, and yes, zealotry is complicated and needs a shear in its own right. We may even have done that at some point. But the point is that the nation sees terrible motives in him. This outsider who's coming to kill a Nasi. Eliyahu Hanavi, in source number 12. Achav, King Achav, sees Eliyahu, and he says to him, "You are the Ocher Yisrael. You are the one who have damaged Israel. Not, you are the prophet who's trying to lead them in a good direction. You caused a drought. There's no rain. You're harming the Jewish people." Yirmiyahu, if you take a look at source number 13, Yirmiyahu is accused of, where was it? V'amru asurim el ha-melech, yumas noa es ha-ish hazeh. They said that Yirmiyahu should be killed. Ki al-kein hu merapei es yidei anshei ha-melchama nisharim ba'ir azos. He is weakening the hands of the warriors who remain in that city. He is weakening the hands of the people. Ki ha-ish hazeh einenu dorei shalom la'am hazeh ki im la-ra'a. He doesn't want to help them. He wants to hurt them, the people say about Yirmiyahu. And then Amos, in source number 14. I love this story with Amos, where Amatziah, the priest for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry, says to Amos, Lech barach lecha al Eretz Yehuda. Go flee to the land of Judea. Ve'echol sham lechem v'sham tinavei. Eat bread there and prophesy there. Where he says to Amos, I know you. You're just offering your prophecies in the hope that people are going to support you and give you bread. That's what Amatziah says to Amos. You're just doing it for bread, for support. You can bring other examples in Tanakh, Midrashim about Mordechai when he doesn't bow and the people criticizing him for that. There are other examples, but the point is that Moshe is certainly a major focus for this. Somebody who is being misinterpreted, and that's what leads to the Lashon Hara. In a sense, you could go back to Gan Eden, where there are two trees, right? What are the two, I mean, there are a lot of trees, but the trees that ultimately matter in our story. Right? What are those trees called? Oh, come on. Right. Eitz Hadas what? Tovara. Right? There's the Eitz HaChayim, the tree of life. eat that, live forever. And Eitz Hadas Tovara, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Moshe is the Eitz HaChayim. He's the tree of life. And not just in the sense that he brought the people Torah, and Torah is called a tree of life. But Moshe has no Ra in his motivations. There's no bad in Moshe's motivations. He's all Tov. But the people are of the Eitz Hadas Tov Vara. They know both. They have good, and they also have Ra. And they see him through the prism of their experiences and their religious personalities, and they can't believe that he's acting in innocence and purity. That's the Lashon Hara. And to go back now to our beginning, Moshe recognizes what's going on when they speak Lashon Hara about him. He recognizes that the accusations they make reflect impurity in themselves. And that's why he says, Achei noda hadavar. Now I understand why they suffer. Because they have this deep impurity inside themselves and they can't appreciate that which is pure, that which is tahor. They have to be here in Egypt until they can learn that. So, whether they end up learning that or not is a good question. But that's Moshe's condemnation at this stage. So, the truth is, right, this isn't optimal for a Jewish leader. If you have somebody who is so pure that people can't relate to them, that can end up being destructive to national morale and to the morale of the leader. Right? I mean, you might almost argue Moshe is the wrong leader for the Jewish people. Let's get somebody who has a couple of dings, so to speak. Someone who has some flaws, and the people will be able to relate to them. You could make that argument. But I think that there's great reason to have a leader like this also. Because we need a role model of purity. You need an Eitz HaChayim also. You need something to aspire to in order to be able to find that in ourselves, right? People who live with a peer group that's just like them. People who interact with others who have the same flaws and the same experiences and all of that never aspire to something greater. We need to associate with people who are, just by dint of their existence, are going to push us to become greater and to do more. Right? If you don't have a Moshe, if your leaders are people who have the same flaws as everybody else, why should you ever grow? Which may be why you see the last source number 15, the Gemara in Mo'i Katan says, based on the Pasuk in Malachi, Kisifsei Kohen Yishmru Das V'Torah Yavakshu Mipiyu. The lips of the Kohen guard knowledge, they seek Torah, they will seek Torah from his mouth, Ki Malach Hashem Tzvakos Hu. Because he, the Kohen, is a Malach of God. So, what does that mean? He's clearly not a Malach of God. But, says the Gemara, If the Rav resembles a Malach, then seek Torah from him. And if not, don't seek it. Parenthetically, though, no one is a Malach. You're never going to find that. If you spend your entire life saying, I will only follow a role model who is a Malach, you're never going to have a role model. But note the commentators. I say the commentator because I don't remember which commentator right now. Sorry. But the line in the Gemara is, Im dome harav l'malach Hashem. If he appears like it to you, the point has to be that you recognize those traits in the person. If when you look at that person, you say, just like me, keep on looking for somebody else. It has to be a relationship where you can recognize and value that which the people were supposed to recognize and value in Moshe, the connection to Hashem and the Tahara that Moshe had, which may well, as Goldie said, have distanced him from the people, but that's part of the point, I think. You follow?
Yeah, and it's a really beautiful idea because, like, if you take it even have the ability, like, to hyper-focus in on what the positive traits that anyone has and ignore the negative traits, then you have the ability to, you know, lament me call it them, like, and to learn from everyone, not just your leaders.
Right.
If you're able, again, to, like, to focus on what that person has that maybe could inspire you that you don't have.
That's really good. It I think it's a good step towards explaining a difficult Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. You have that Mishnah that says that if you learn even one thing or two things from somebody else, right, then they are already your Rebbe. And you always look at that and think, well, because I learned one thing, because I learned two things from them, that's what makes them my Rebbe. But however, if it's what you are saying, that that's what you see in them, those elements of theirs, that's what you perceive, then yes, they become eligible to be your Rebbe in that regard. So that could fit very well. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you.
And thanks, Rabbi Tortino.